Welcome, everybody, back here to The Veil of Sound. It's our regular Sunday interview, and I'm very happy to have somebody on the show whose face might be a little unfamiliar to people by now, but if you have watched the tour of a certain masked American extreme metal band in the last few days and weeks, you will have seen him on stage. So, Tommy, first of all, thanks for being on the show.
Torsten, thank you. Thanks for having me. Hell yeah.
We'll be talking about those masked extreme metalists in a moment. But first, I want to talk about your other project, which will be hitting the shelves, or which has already hit the shelves by the time this comes out. So I first want to talk about Squid Pisser.
Hmm.
Lovely name. It sounds like a name that I would tell my mom, God have rest on her soul, would have told her around Saturday afternoon tea, something like that. You know, like, Mom, how do you like the new Squid Pisser?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
How did you come up with that name?
I've always been a fan. I've always been writing lyrics and concepts and ideas for bands that I've been, you know, working on ever since I was really, really young. So just kind of mashing words together and things that like elicit some kind of visceral imagery are always the best for me. It's just, you know, immediately some kind of slimy, tentacly,
yeah,
something pops into your head, and it might not be the same for everybody. But that's just one of a bajillion that I've kind of come up with. And I'm always making notes of ideas for songs or titles or whatever. So it's all just to kind of feed into the art that I'm trying to do is why I'm always coming up with stuff like that. But that was actually a direct reference, a song title from this band Razzle Blaster that I had back 17 years ago that never really like took form fully. And so it was kind of always this itch that I hadn't scratched, this Razzle Blaster band. Mm-hmm. And so cut to 15 years later, I was like, okay, it's time to focus on doing this music project that I've had in my head for many years. And Squid Pisser, again, was one of the song titles that I just thought was like, would be perfect and kind of an homage to that. So anyways, that's kind of the long and short of Squid Pisser, the title, yeah.
But then the squid must be black, right? Like the piss of a squid must be black.
Ink, right? Could be. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It could be bright blue. It's like, it could be a neon green. It could be glow in the dark. I don't know. That's the thing. It's like, we'll see because, you know, we haven't played very many live shows yet. And so it would be great to start pissing on the crowd and figuring out a way to do that. But we'll see.
To make it clear for everybody, when he's talking about we, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's only two people on stage, right? Or are you having a third person on tour?
Yeah, initially. So it's Seth Carolina, the drummer of this band Starcrawler, and I came together kind of during COVID and hashed out, you know, I had demoed like 100 songs, and then he's the drummer. He and I worked on, I forget, we got like 25 and went into the studio and recorded them. So it was just he and I kind of putting everything together. I ended up doing all the bass guitar vocals and things like that. And so we played a few shows where it was just he and I, and then that was the exact goal. It was like, we need to build a five piece because in my head, it's two guitars, bass, vocals, and drums. But I've done this before where I've waited forever for it to be perfect. And then it's just tough to get stuff off the ground. So I said, screw it. We'll just start doing things with the two of us and attract people through our action. And so we ended up getting the next member we got is Michael Armendariz. From this band called Duck Duck Goose. So he's playing guitar with us now. He's an amazing, lovely, demented soul and one of my best friends now. And so, he's playing with us now. And then we also have, we have been doing some live shows with as a five piece. So we also have a dude, his name's Corey. He's playing bass in the band and he used to play John Goblikon live on tour with Necrogoblikon. Mm-hmm. And then our friend Kieran, who lives in Canada, who we found because he did a cover of a Squid Pisser song on YouTube. So we said, that guy can play the songs. Let's have him come out for shows. And so that's the current five piece with what we're doing right now. So it was two people. And then now we're trying to always play with five people if we can. So that's where we're at right now. Yeah.
Just to get this right, how does it feel for you if There is a cover of one of your bands, and that band isn't even 2 years old. How does that feel?
Oh, I mean, that was pretty exciting. You know, it kind of like felt like, okay, cool, we're doing something right. People are like responding to it in this kind of such a positive way where they want to pick up a guitar and figure out how to do it, you know? So yeah, that was an exciting thing for sure. And then also we made like a friend and bandmate out of that whole thing. So that's just kind of beautiful. And
I mean, there is at least one song that you didn't have to learn, right?
Us?
No, he.
Or him?
Him.
Which one? Which one?
Yeah, like if he covered a song of yours, then there's one song less he had to learn.
Oh, touring. Yeah, yeah, exactly. When he came in to do the shows, exactly. Yeah, he already had it down. He had two down. So yeah, exactly.
What I like about Squid Pisser is the sense of humor that it definitely has. I mean, not only in the title. Also, there are lots of other things. I mean, there is this image of like action figurines of Squid Pisser, and I'm like, okay. I'm not sure if that is just a cover or if it's actually meant serious and the guys are trying to do like Barbie and Ken models out of this. But there is this certain kind of like humor, which I always like. And then again, there is this extremely well-made and thought through grindcore that accompanies it. Do you like to play with these paradoxes, you know, hard, brutal on the one side, and then orange.
Yeah.
And pink colors.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for noticing. Yeah. I think like always juxtaposing, you know, whether it's like violence with some kind of sense of humor or some kind of cutesy elements or something is always more interesting to me, right? Because there is like a duality within everything pretty much. Not to get too much into that, but yeah, I think like just artistically, when things are kind of two-sided, you're able to flip it over and be like, oh, what's going on here? Oh, damn. And then again, just kind of subverting things too. Like, oh, that's not what I would expect this to sound like. Or you hear it, you're like, that's not what I expect it to look like if you get one before the other. And that's just how I've always enjoyed art that I've been into ever since I was really, really young, is like heavy shit that has a sense of humor kind of, but then there's a fine line too, where it's like, if they're too kind of goofy or leaning too far into the humor thing, it's like, it can be off-putting for me personally. So, So that's kind of been my approach, I guess, in doing Squid Pisser specifically, I suppose.
So how do you feel about bands, punk hardcore bands, who try to embellish their own songs with title tracks or with titles? Like, I still remember the goofiness of Death by Stereo, because they had like these amazing sarcastic song titles. My favorite probably still like One-Legged Man in an Ass-Kicking Contest. Is that something that appeals to you, like also from a lyrical point of view, that like sarcasm and humor?
Actually, well, yeah, sure. Sarcasm and humor, for sure. I kind of feel like for me, when I'm doing things, there's a ratio, and I probably learned this from the greats, I'm guessing, and the greats being things that I grew up on. But like, I think there has to be some kind of ratio of like brutality to humor. And I think it's more emphasis on brutality and serious, just some kind of serious thing. And then just a little bit of tinge of humor. I think that when bands kind of like offset it, that it kind of tells me these guys are just goofing around, and maybe there's not like necessarily a poignant message within the music, and it makes me kind of like not even necessarily go looking for one. And I'm more interested in some kind of like the allure of like some kind of serious overtones and but like in terms of the song titles, I know there are a lot of bands that, especially in the early 2000s, that were kind of doing these long, ridiculous song titles. And I appreciated that, because it was kind of like in rebellion of like songs, you know, every other song in the world. And I did appreciate that. But also I think that they lack, and like, an iconicism, I guess, where like, mm-hmm. I think that with shorter song titles, it's just, if you can summarize it in two words or whatever it may be, it's like, it's iconic. It just feels like this piece that stands alone without having to over-explain things. Maybe that's what I'm doing now, is over-explaining mm-hmm. my thoughts on yeah. it. But that's kind of, yeah, hopefully that answers.
It does. And then on the other hand, Squid Pisser is although it's always grindcore at its core, there are many different passages on the record where especially the beat and the drumming are sometimes not even hardcore at all. There are some very, very clearly punkish, sometimes nearly offbeat-like passages. Is that something that is important for you to have like a diversity of soundscapes?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I actually really struggle with genres in general because I don't really even know specifically what grindcore is or what a D beat is, although I've played in bands that do it, I think, but I've kind of deliberately like not researched these things because I don't necessarily want to be too influenced or thinking in boxes too much. So I kind of just do compose things just to try and move people physically, like, you know, if somebody was listening to it. And also it's just taking inspiration from bands that I've liked and being like, you know, things that I've learned over the years. So again, I kind of struggle with the genres and stuff in general. So, I mean, yeah, it's important, but it is important to me to not get lumped into one or easily defined as anything, I think. Because all of my favorite bands, you can't do that with. Like, and they all kind of rise above for me. It's like they're trailblazing in their own arena, and they're kind of creating a new arena that a lot of bands kind of follow suit with. And I think that's the most exciting thing for me, is like doing things that nobody's done before. And not saying I've done that or I've succeeded in that, but it's always been like something that I've tried to do. So yeah.
So if I understand you correctly, then one appeal of making music for you is to do something really well, but not do it too often.
Right. Yeah, that's probably in there for sure. It's like, cool. We've established this thing. Now let's again kind of subvert people's expectations and then like do something different. Mm-hmm. And you know, the next Squid Pisser record might not sound anything like this first one or this first batch of songs, potentially. So I'm not sure. But yeah, we'll see. I think like subverting people's expectations is kind of like what summarizes it there for me, which is fun and exciting.
You also have some really nice features on your record. The one that stands out to me probably is Yako of Melt Banana.
She's amazing.
How did these features happen? Did you approach them or?
Yeah. So when I was doing demos of all the Squid Pisser stuff a few years ago now, I had become friends with John Clardy, who's in Terra Melos.
Yeah.
Amazing drummer. And he and I would actually always bond. He would come over to shows of my band The Manx that I was playing around town. And he and I would always like geek out about Gwar. We were both huge Gwar fans together, so like we became friends kind of through that. And then when I was demoing Squid Pisser songs, I needed a drummer to record stuff. I hit him up, and Terra Melos had toured with Melt Banana, like, I don't even know, geez, what was that, like 15 years ago or something. And so they were friends, and so we were talking and we were like working on a few songs together, and we didn't have a vocalist, so we were, the idea came up to get different vocalists for every song for this album. And he was like, well, we were brainstorming. And of course, Yako, just pie in the sky, was like one of our first. And he just so happened to be friends with her. So we hit her up and it worked out perfectly. And she was amazing and delivered. I didn't have to like touch, direct, edit anything. Like, what she gave was just, it blew our minds. And we were so like just goosebumps with it, you know, like really stoked. So, yeah.
So were you there when it was recorded or did you just get the file?
She recorded it in Tokyo and yeah, I had sent her the song. That's right. Yeah. I mean, I remember it coming into my inbox and I was recording with my other band Death Club down here in my home studio and it came in and we all listened to it and it was a very exciting moment. It was just like, oh my God, like her voice, you know, like, wow.
Very unique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean too. Like, it's like, that's what I strive for. It's like, that's, you know, it's her and you know, it's Melt Banana when you hear it. And like, that's the coolest in my opinion.
It's one of those few voices where I say, okay, if anybody has ever really listened to Melt Banana, out of 100 people who really listen to them, 95 will always recognize that voice because it's unique. But I have to squeeze in one question, though. You just spoke about Def Club. Isn't it the way, I mean, like, for transparency's sake, we're recording this on Super Bowl Sunday, and you already see, like, I'm in gear, I'm hyped. But isn't it the way that Def Club is playing Roadburn in about 2.5 months?
I'm not actually sure. I'm not playing in that band anymore. And So I'm not sure. Is that in Europe? I got to catch up on things.
Yep.
Oh, cool. Well, that's cool.
I'm pretty sure they do.
Oh, cool. Amazing. Yeah, you should go see them. Say what's up. They're awesome. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Label mates of you as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, so I had joined Def Club. No, I think, okay, so I run a record label called Sweatband Records. They had hit me up about doing a release. We had done a cassette co-release, I think, with 31G. That's kind of how we became friends in that realm. And then they needed a guitar player. I hopped in there for a couple of years. And and then Squid Pisser's also on 31G. So yeah, we're a lot of crossover there.
But correct me if I'm wrong, isn't the new release or the new releases, we have to talk about that as well. Aren't they coming out through Skin Graft, right?
Yeah, Skin Graft, huge. Mark is amazing and I'm just so stoked on that. Like, and yeah, speaking of Melt Banana, and then also shout out to Lovely Little Girls on Skin Graft. I don't know if you've checked them out, but the singer painted this, Gregory Jacobson. Just so such a cool family to be a part of, and very excited about that. So yeah, we have a 7-inch/24-page comic book coming out, and then we also have a full length coming out on 12-inch Skin Graft and Sweatband Records.
I have to ask that because question between the two of us and the few people that are watching this. Is this 7-inch not only just a vehicle for the 24-page comic book?
I wouldn't say so, actually, because we were going to do that anyhow, you know? But then Mark had the great idea to do a comic. And then, man, so like, you know, doing creative stuff and commissioning artists and things like that can really like potentially be a drag and turn into a thing that goes on forever. But luckily, all the artists I hit up were able to just stick to the deadline and get it all in. And like, we turned that around really quickly and got it all put together. So I'm really pleased with that. And I think it's just a beautiful piece of art. It's like,
from what I have seen, it is. And to make it clear for everybody why I asked that. So Vaporize a Tadpole is the record, is the 7-inch that is going to be out with that 24-page comic book. If you do not like comics, or if you just say, okay, I only want one release, then you could also, what is that? Vaporize a Neighbor. That's the name of the LP, right?
So it's Vaporize a Neighbor is the 7-inch with the comic.
I knew I would mix it up.
That's okay. And then Vaporize a Tadpole is a combination of the 7-inch and the 12-inch that we put out. So it has the 9 songs from the My Tadpole Legion.
Yeah.
And then Vaporize a Neighbor, all of those, plus a couple of extra like demo tracks and cool artwork and stuff. So yeah.
But it does not have the 24-page book, right? To make it clear for everybody.
CD does not, right, exactly. But you can get all those through Skin Graft, and you can go to the Sweatband Records site, and that'll direct you to the link to buy it too.
Just wanted to make clear for everybody out there. I mean, like, I know that there will be people who already bought the amazing record. I was fortunate enough to listen to it like a few days ago, and I really, really liked it. I just wanted to make sure that everybody knows, you know, there will be two releases, both out on the same day. We also have to talk about that, my friend. Both out on the same day. One is a 7-inch with a comic book. One is a 12-inch full length with 14, 15 songs, as Tommy has mentioned. Why, for Christ's sake, two releases on the same day?
I think it's just kind of, you know, different strokes for different folks. It's like, we got a 7-inch and a comic book. If you like physical media, I guess the CD is physical media too, but there's extra stuff on there. And a lot of people have been asking about CDs, and those are kind of, in fashion, I guess, right now again. And, and I think that was, Mark just had the idea to kind of like onslaught with a couple of different releases at once. And I think it was a good idea. And yeah.
You have spoken about the artists who contributed to the book. Gregory Jacobson, again, being one of those contributing to it. Were those your choices, or did Mark say, oh, I might like Dave Savage could be cool, or Johnny Ryan could be cool? So who came up with those? It's like 10 or 11 people, right?
That was all me, actually. Everybody, and I know most of the artists too. I think the only one I had cold emailed, but I had talked to before about teaming up, was Mike Diana. But I think I knew everybody else personally. But it was really great and a dream come true to get something from Mike Diana, who, you know, Boiled Angel and stuff. I mean, like, that documentary that came out is amazing of his. I don't know if you're familiar, but he's just like a, same thing, like kind of like a trailblazer, you know, back in the 90s, who was doing like that kind of fucked up stuff. And he was, and he almost like went to prison for it. So, it was just a dream come true to get him and everybody else too, and all my friends who were on it. So, but yes, that was all people that I knew. And, but the suggestion to do a comic was 100% Mark. And, like I said, it was kind of like daunting at first and a little scary, because I was like, I don't know if people are going to turn stuff in on time, but everyone did. And, so I'm glad Mark suggested that.
So let me also talk about like times. Like, how long did it take for you to get those 11 people on board and then to get their finished product, their finished pages? Long process or rather short?
I think it was only like a month, because I've been trying to get better at like setting deadlines when I'm working with people and just being like, mm-hmm. this is what it is. And actually my girlfriend, my fiance, Anastasia upstairs, she's a producer for video games, and she's like, all right, let's get a little spreadsheet together and like figure out all of the aspects of like commissioning this much stuff from people at one time. And like, we followed that to a T, and it worked perfectly. And so like, I learned a lot through that process. And I think it was only like a month. We just kind of gave everyone a month, you know? And that was like a realistic timeline, because that's when I needed to turn it in, was like probably 6 weeks from the time we shot it all out. But yeah, so it's smooth.
Sounds like it. Let's ask one last question about that. When you say like commissioned pieces, I'm sure that a lot of those might have done it for the benefit of your friendship, but there might have also been others that you had to pay, right? And if you had to pay them, how many of those records do you have to sell to break even?
Oh, God. If you guys want to know the nitty gritty of like doing a band or like venturing off to try and build this empire, that's this creative idea that you've had for a long time, and really kind of putting all your chips on the table, I could get really, really into that. I mean, I have a spreadsheet that has all of those numbers on it. Outfits, mask stuff, recording time, mixing, engineering. I have the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's, I can give you a number of what I'm in right now, what I'm in debt, but maybe I shouldn't do that.
No.
But it's a lot. It's a fucking lot. And I'm gonna be it's more than just selling all of the records. I'll tell you that. It's like,
so even if you sell all the records, you're not breaking even.
Not on the total, no. Cause like, okay. You know, the entire again, kind of like enterprise that this is, it's like a small business basically for each band that you're doing. And I say that because I'm doing multiple different bands, so I have multiple enterprises basically, if you think about it that way. And I'm not good at thinking in business terms at all. Like, I'm very much a creative mind, and then all the numbers and stuff just kind of get tossed over here, and usually I disregard them, but as I've gotten older, I'm getting better at like at least keeping track of them. And so the one thing I know is that it's going to probably take a few years to like get into the green at this rate with all the other things that I have going on. I think that if I just did Squid Pisser full-time 100%, I'd be able to make that quicker, but because I have Cancer Christ, Sweatband Records, other things that I'm doing, it's gonna just, it's the long game with all this stuff in terms of financially. But I believe in it all, so I think that it'll come back around, and I'm gonna keep investing. So yeah, but that's a good question.
I'm also asking that question to point it out to the people out there who always think that as soon as somebody is releasing a record, he's gonna make money from it. I know that a lot of people who support us and who follow us don't think that way, but just to make it clear for everybody, you know, that what Tommy has been describing right now, that is not about the numbers. To me, it's about the dedication. And just to want to point that out, you know, if we're not talking about like Coldplay or Mogwai or even Converge, who can make a decent chunk of money out of it, but still not a living. But, you know, it takes a lot of dedication, I think, to go the long run, as you said it, especially this kind of genre. Because, I mean, grindcore is and will always be the most extreme form of metal. And yes, I still say that, even though I know that a lot of black metal fans out there will now be screaming, no, like, black metal is much more. No, grindcore is the extremist thing of metal. Are you aware of the fact that also your beloved niche is the one that sells least?
No, I don't know about anything like that. I probably should do cool. some research, honestly. But
no, it's just like it yeah, shows the dedication, right?
Yeah, like that wouldn't affect what I do. I think that like as artists, we create because like we're hitting this groove or we're finding this flow state, and it's just like we're being told kind of what to do. I'm not saying there's like a higher power or anything like that, but it's just you're kind of looking at things and you're drawing all these elements, and like there's certain ones that are lighting up and you're like, yes, this, and then there are the things that are dimming out, and you're kind of like, you're not doing that, you're doing what feels right. Yeah. And then once you do start thinking about how to get people at your show or how to get your numbers up, I feel like there's just a fine line with that. I think that then things can feel very contrived. And I've seen that. I've been involved with projects that have employed that technique. And it just doesn't feel genuine. And because of that, it's like, it's a waste of time. So yeah, I think I would, regardless of what the numbers are, I would just be doing what I'm doing. And I think anyone would be doing that. Most artists, I feel like, you know.
Is that also something that you are looking for in the people you work with? Like you've already mentioned 31G, Skin Graft, all the visual artists that contributed to the book. Is that something that is important to you, that those people have a similar kind of dedication?
I lost that little last bit right there.
Okay, sorry. No, is it important for you to find the same kind of dedication in the people, dedication to the thing that you want to achieve in the people you work with?
Yeah, absolutely. And those people are usually pretty easy to pick out, and it's like, you know, you're a fan of someone's stuff because they're living it and they're fucking sacrificing for it, and it's like. For me anyways, yeah, it's I've been able to kind of like ascertain like who to work with and who not to at this point. Mm-hmm. And like for the first 10, 15 years of me trying to do this stuff, I really didn't have that skill. And it was a lot of, you waste a lot of time with people who are like, aren't serious or they're half-hearted or whatever, just like a million different negative traits that are going to get you caught up. But at this point, I don't have time to do any of that. And I've learned to like who to work with and who not to waste time with. So yeah, but that's a good question. Yeah.
I think there is also a certain level of dedication that is necessary for you guys to play your shows, because you're not just playing shows like a normal band. No, you have to be masked. How hard is it for you guys to do that? How sweaty are you underneath?
Oh yeah, I mean it's the worst for Seth, our drummer, because his head has a bunch of hair under there, and there's no place for the heat to escape, and his entire body's going. I mean, we're all using our entire body, but like Seth is just like a jackrabbit back there, locomotive. So I feel like, I mean, he's had a rough time after a 23 minute set, you know, here and there. But these squid masks are pretty comfortable, so it's not too bad. But you know, also we wear these snake masks in Cancer Christ, and those are difficult in their own way, but you get used to them real quick and it just becomes a part of you, you know what I mean? Like it's no more than just learning how to play the guitar or instrument that you're doing. It's just an added thing.
And then we can also cut to the chase that I hinted at the beginning of this interview. We can now proclaim that you are a touring member of GWAR. How did that happen? Apart from an obvious love for masking on stage.
Yeah, man, my whole GWAR journey and knowing it is where it is right now is pretty crazy, and you know, goes way, way back to, I mean, I can go back to before I even, you know, first heard them and discovered their awesomeness. But to kind of make it hopefully somewhat concise, I mean, I became a huge fan when I was like 13 or so, and then I had
so
seen
5 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Jeez, well, so it was more like 25 years ago or something like that, like when we were both playing football. When you were in high school, I was playing Pop Warner in middle school. So what was that? I don't even know. 99 or something like that, maybe 98. And then they came, I lived in Northern California. They would come play this place called the Phoenix Theater in Petaluma. It's where they shot the Tommy the Cat music video, if you're familiar mm-hmm. with Primus.
That one actually, yes.
Yeah, cool, right. So that's the theater is, I used to go there in my teen years, and just it's still there. It's run by this guy, Tom Gaffey. It's this amazing all ages venue. But I would see GWAR there when they came through town. And I remember the first time, and they just, you know, blew me away every aspect of it. And I had always kind of strived for, like, again, like who else is doing that? They set like a bar for me. And So I don't know, cut to, I don't know, years later, I was living in LA. I'm still living in LA, but my friend Mike Chillian and I were big fans, and we were animating a bunch of stuff together. Some of his own cartoons that we were working on. And we had the idea to reach out to Odorous, Dave Brocky, and see if he would be down to do a voice on like a cartoon that we were working on. And he hit us back, and he said he was down, he was going to be in town for like some con or something, some Comic Con maybe or something, I forget. And we met up, recorded his voice, and we were just kind of like super stoked. So that was kind of like the first time me and my friends became friendly with those guys. And again, I was maybe in my early 20s at that time, and didn't really keep in touch too much, but like every now and again we'd see each other. I'd go to Richmond to hit the GWAR bar, and like we'd run into Dirks, Ball Sack, the Jaws of Death, like at the GWAR bar, and things like that. We'd go to the GWAR barbecue, which was really cool. And So I was always just a huge fan, like a big, big fan. And what happened? So then kind of cut to years later, while I started Squid Pisser, my friend Anthony Melhoff and I had an idea to start this band called Cancer Christ. And we started working really hard on that. And I remember it was like the first week of us working on that. My main thought was, if we can get this band to tour with Gwar, then I'd kind of like fulfill this lifelong itch of mine of like going on tour with Gwar, opening for Gwar. And, you know, 2 years later, we had gotten this email from Gwar's management, and cool, it was happening. So like that, we set out to do that. It's taking place. And so we went on tour with them in October. Cancer Christ was opening for this East Coast tour. And, you know, getting to say hi to those guys after not seeing them for a long time is cool, just to kind of be friendly with them for an entire month of shows. And at that point, I was getting to know Brent Pustulus a bit. And he was like, you know, this is like my last tour. I'm going to be dipping, moving on to other things and stuff. And so I was like, my first thought was, wow, you know, what a cool run you had in this band and stuff. And I wonder who they're going to get next. And as the tour is going on, I'm kind of realizing they're kind of talking to me about certain things and kind of feeling things out. And then we did a sound check together one day. I think we were in Richmond or something. And we just kind of, the idea of me playing with them came up, and Brent started kind of really taking me under his wing a bit and telling me about it. And so I really appreciate that about Brent. He's an amazing dude. All those guys are super cool, super sweet. And then, yeah, so I came back from the tour and immediately started doing auditions, just in videos. I was just learning all the songs and that they asked people who were doing auditions to do. And then I was like, well, screw that. I know all these other songs. I'm just going to like record them all. And I put, you know, I had just had fun with them, where I like kind of set up my office with Gwar stuff, and I did lighting. I just had fun, and I did little animations and stuff. I just like doing that stuff. So I think they could tell that I'm really into it. And so I flew out to Richmond a couple months ago, maybe now, and did a rehearsal or an audition in person with them. And that went well, and it was fun to see everybody again. And I kind of just thought, well, you know, they're probably going to get, you can't like set yourself up for total disappointment. So I think I was just like, well, they're probably going to get somebody else, so I'm just not going to like worry too much about it. But yeah, then Bishop had hit me up a few days after that and was like, dude, we want you to come on tour with us. And so I just kind of like ran around in my garage and jumped up and down and then fell on the ground. And it's a total dream come true moment. So that's where we're at right now. I'm flying out next week to go do rehearsals for the tour, and we'll see how everything goes. And hopefully by the time this comes out, I'll have played, you know, a week or two's worth of shows with them.
So do you already know about your costume?
Yeah, so that's a big thing that Matt McGuire and I have been in contact with about over the last couple, about the last month or so, I'd say. We've been shooting ideas back and forth, and we were on FaceTime yesterday. He was in the slave pit, and we were going over things, placements of things, and so that's all very exciting. And oh yeah, so this isn't coming out until people have already seen it, so, but I still, yeah. I just feel like I can't say anything still. It's weird.
No, you just don't have to describe. What interests me about it is, I mean, like, it has to be a highly individual costume. It has to be tailor-made to your body. So how much literal flexibility do you have for like moving? That is something that really interests me.
Yeah, so good point and cool thought. This is actually, because it's a little bit last minute, they're kind of going with the path of least resistance in terms of like piecing together this costume. Mm-hmm. Because I think that if and when we decide that I'll become more of a permanent member, we'll then be able to have more in-depth time to do everything. There's like many aspects of what I'll be wearing that are tailored to me, but I haven't tried it on yet. So I'm going to go out next week, and that's when we'll do fitting and rehearsals and stuff like that. But I did try on Pustulus's stuff when I was there last, and it's like, it's totally reasonable. I mean, like, you know, human beings can do stuff and wear stuff. It's not detrimental to anything, but it's just kind of like, we'll see what the vision is like, I feel like, and being able to see the frets and stuff and just getting used to it, which will inevitably probably take a few shows, I'm guessing. But yeah. Yeah, it's exciting. It's cool.
I'll be watching the video. So people, when you are listening to this, I will already have seen them. You will maybe already have seen the guys on stage, so you will know even more than I do. But I'm pretty excited about that for you, because I think I'm very sure it will be a blast, right?
Yeah, totally.
But I have to ask, that is that something that you like to do? I mean, like, you've spoken about several bands now in which you have been wearing masks on stage. Is that something that you like in general, or is that something that is just your stage personality?
Yeah, I think it's way cooler to go see a band and have there be some visual element to go with it. Like, I think it's boring to not do that, and a total waste, honestly. I mean, like, there are times where, like, you know, people's personalities, just they're pure, like how they dress and stuff, it can make sense, I think. But like, you're given this, if you're going to go out and do a live show, it's like you're given this opportunity to present art in a way that's other than aurally. You're able to like curate some kind of artistic experience. So why not do that? It's like if I were to watch a horror movie and then there were no effects in it or something, or the camera was just in an angle that was unflattering or something. It's like, all that stuff matters. And if you can, you can. And if you can do something interesting and unique with it or fun. Yeah. It's way more fun to me to do that than just to go up with jeans and a t-shirt. And as an audience member too, it's like, that's how I get whisked away into a whole other world of wonder, you know? And that's what I think is fun about music and is fun about art in general, is just kind of like being carried away on this cool kick of whatever it is that you want to turn it into for people. So yeah.
Don't wonder. I'm just writing something down for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I was wondering, when you are speaking about that and speaking about the possibility of presenting art on stage, also in the way that the musicians are costumed or whatever they're wearing, do you have like a band, maybe apart from Gwar, which has perfected that for you on stage?
Yeah, I think Sleepy Time Gorilla Museum. Are you familiar with, yes, that band?
Still trying, yeah, to get them, but I will.
Oh, you will. They're back in action right now. I mean, you know, they've always kind of been around. Yeah, very exciting. Man, yeah, like going to see them. Oh, God, I'm going to get goosebumps right now. Like, I saw them on Halloween. I forget what year, but I was 20 years old. It was in San Francisco at this place called The Pound. I would see Gwar there too a bunch. Or maybe a couple times actually. But yeah, Sleepy Time Gorilla Museum. Like, they'd come through the crowd like with a flag, like all dressed up, playing like flutes and playing a little song to get on stage, and like you're just like, what's about to happen? And it's just this feeling of excitement and nervousness, and they get on stage, they have all these homemade things, the lighting, just the vibe, like, oh, they curate such a otherworldly experience. And I think that, yeah, they've really perfected that. And I'm trying to think of any others. Nothing's coming to my mind right now.
What about the Locust?
Oh yeah, I love the Locust. They're kind of like, yeah, right, like the sonics that are going on, like, over, I don't know if overshadow is the right word, but like they complement what they're wearing. I think it's the perfect combination pairing of things. I'm just thinking that they're not so much about like theatrics or a stage show, because they kind of get up and just do their thing and they look fucking cool in those outfits and they sound fucking vicious and same thing, but they're an amazing like doing the only people doing that and doing it so well. But yeah, they're amazing too. I'm trying to think of who else. I don't know.
Yeah,
can you think of
it? I would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, that would be easy. Being also like, I love the old prog rock from like the early 70s, early to mid 70s. And the first thing that would come to be to my mind would be Peter Gabriel when he was still singing in Genesis, who always had like huge different costumes and stuff. And on the other hand, also in the late 70s, early 80s, it would be probably Devo, you know, like.
Oh, Devo.
Guys also totally. Always came up dressed on stage.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be the first two that would come to my mind.
Yeah.
And for everybody else out there who listens to this and stuff like, oh, come on, guys, you forget something. This band,
sure.
X, Y, Z, write it down in the comments. We love being told that we don't know shit. You know, like that is definitely what we want to, like, goof around with us. Tell us bands that you've seen that do that work. Oh, yeah. Heilung do that also very well. This, I think they're Danish or definitely Scandinavian. How should I describe it? That to me is like folklore to the max. Heilung, Heilung. Do that. Yeah.
Skull, like animal skulls and stuff. Is that what you're thinking?
They do have something like that. Yes.
Okay.
And they're like
really good. They played the video game awards in LA, I think, like a few months ago. I think so. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
But they do that very, very well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And before anybody says, like, okay, corpse paint is no costume. Black metal corpse paint is no costume. Oh, Kiss. We forgot about Kiss.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Corpse paint. Kiss. Yeah. I'm looking at my records right now. And I'm like, who can I even think of that also does it really well? I know there are a lot out there. But I don't know. I guess Sleepy Time is just the one for me right now.
The new record is really good.
Sleepy Time? I've been saving it. I'm going to sit down with it eventually, but I'm excited. I have tickets for April to go see them.
I was fortunate to listen to it a few weeks ago, and I was blown away by it. I have to say, I've always liked them. But
this one got you. Exciting.
Yeah.
Sick.
It could. I still trying to figure out whether it's the excitement about it, or whether it's like 100% only the record. But even
either
if I try to take away the excitement, it's still a great record. It's like really good.
That feeds into it too. It's like if you're excited about something, then it amplifies it. That's awesome. I can't wait to check it out. That's cool.
You will like it. You will like it, definitely. So, Thomas, thanks for all the insight into Squidpisser, into your Gwar stint, into all of the other things that we were able to talk about. But nobody leaves interviews with us here without having to answer the quick fire round at the end. You will get two alternatives, have to choose one of them, and give a short explanation for your choice. Like, why do you like Catwoman more than, let's say, Scarlet Witch?
Okay.
Or whatever.
Is that the question?
No, it's just an example.
Okay, cool. I'm unfamiliar with either of those, so I'm glad that's not the question.
As you were talking about Richmond, Virginia, I have to give you two Virginia or Richmond bands. Avail versus Strike Anywhere.
Avail?
So, yeah.
I'm unfamiliar with that band or Strike Anywhere. Are these two bands that I should know about?
Both from the Richmond area, both Virginia based, and both classic punk bands, I would say, from the second half of the 90s, somewhere like that.
I gotta educate myself on that. I gotta check them out. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess you'll know the next two bands, although they're even older, but they're from your home state, so it might give you a connection. Or at least they played. No, wait, what? One of them is from your home state. The other one isn't. Black Flag versus Circle Jerks.
You know, I'm not very familiar with either of those bands either. I don't know any songs. There's like a TV song or something, or a beer song.
I also can tell you why I chose those two, because when listening to your new record, to Squid Pisser songs, there were some vocal parts on there which reminded me of like the hecticness of Roland's in Black Flag. And then there were other parts where I thought like, okay, this sounds a little bit like Keith Morris for the Circle Jerks. So that was my reason, because there are moments, and that is a question that we could connect to that. There were moments of a record which were a little bit slower, like stepping back from grindcore into hardcore and then even into like more or less old school punkish things. I think you've already answered the question indirectly, but was that an influence on you, like punk?
I didn't even know about punk music until I moved to LA when I was 20, and I really punk. So I was always looking for the most extreme stuff, and so when I had listened to punk, I'm like, and because also I was a guitar player, and I'm like, okay, so they're just playing power chords, and I understand this, and it's very simple, and it doesn't seem that like intense to me. So I just didn't really appreciate it until I heard Melt Banana, right? And it's like freak punk. And then I heard The Crucifix, which was like, oh, this is like demented punk. Like, they're not using notes and chords that normally people use. They're like so far out of any kind of diatonic approach to Western music or anything at all. It's just like, which I loved. It was like this lack of knowledge that kind of like of music theory that, you know, which a lot of punk rock I'm sure does. But so I didn't really know about punk rock until, again, I had heard those two bands. But sorry, I got lost. What, where were we at?
You were talking about the only punk band that you heard.
Yeah, I think it was kind of like The Crucifix. So I don't know Black Flag really still to this day. Like I try it out every now and again, but it just kind of like seeps off of me, or it just rolls off of me kind of like, and nothing's really grabbed me. Like one day I'll probably learn to appreciate that stuff, but there wasn't really a deliberate approach of like, this needs to sound more like this. Again, like genres and stuff, just I struggle with even knowing, because people throw things at me all the time. Like my friends and stuff, like, it's kind of like this and this and this and this. I'm just like, I don't quite know the differences between all those things. And I think I deliberately stay in that naive realm, which I think kind of like, you know, goes back to The Crucifix conversation just right now that I was just saying, is that like, they didn't know what they were doing, so they made this thing that was, you know, really unique because they weren't adhering to these formulas and stuff like that. So I think that's the approach that I try and take, is like, stay in the dark about a lot of things, you know.
I'm pretty sure you know the next two bands, also because they're like classic 3-1-G realm bands. The Locust versus Swing Kids.
I never listened to the Swing Kids really. Same thing. But the Locust, when I first discovered them, yeah, I must have been 20 or something like that. It was the same. I had the same feeling. It was like, oh shit, these guys are breaking all these rules, making their own rules. Yeah. And
I think that's a thing, right? Like, make your own rules.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is also something that, in my opinion, connects them even to a band like Gwar. You know, don't give a fuck about rules. These are our rules. We do it the way we want to do.
Yeah. It's tough to do that. It takes a certain type of person. Anthony, our Cancer Christ singer, St. Anthony, he's very all about breaking rules. And I think it's been very beneficial for the band in general, is because I remember when he brought up getting a flamethrower. I'm like, dude, we can't like have a flamethrower at shows. And he's like, yeah, we can. And I'm like, okay.
Rammstein does it all the time.
Yeah, they do it all the time. Exactly. So screw it.
Next two bands, Dillinger Escape Plan versus Discordant Axis.
Love Dillinger Escape Plan. Very influential. when I first discovered them, it was the same thing. It was like, holy fuck, what is happening? You know, I was very young when I discovered them. And then because I was into Dillinger, people gave me Discordant access. And it was another thing where it just didn't stick for me. So I never really like got into them, but love the Dillinger escape plan. And what I love about Dillinger is that they give you something to bite onto. And even though shit's all fucked up, it's a lot of it's still kind of in 4/4 and you can groove to it. And I think that having something to bite onto is very important. And I don't remember that being the case with Discordant Axis. It seems a little bit too, from what I remember, like too niche maybe. But I like that there's some like poppy elements with Dillinger's escape plan. So yeah.
And that they also always give you a kind of like reverb, right?
Yeah, I think that's really important. Yeah.
Next two bands. I cannot overestimate the effect that both had on me. Don't know about you, but Converge versus Botch.
Yeah, Botch, it was another thing. It was like, oh, you like the Dillinger Escape Plan? You'll love Botch. And for me, it was like, just didn't
really
stick.
That is a strange comparison. Doesn't
people
work
always do it. But it's like, Botch really influenced these bands, I guess. They were around before, from my understanding.
Yeah,
I'm not
like,
really sure.
Not before Converge, but Botch was before Dillinger and before Discordant Axis. Yes, definitely.
Okay, yeah. I know Botch just played, our drummer from Cancer Christ just went to a show, I think, recently. But yeah, but Converge, I remember hearing that Jane Doe record when I was in high school, and I kind of didn't get it. Until years later, and now I think it's awesome, and seeing them live is amazing. And Kurt had mixed our My Tadpole Legion record, which is, he did an amazing job at that. And yeah, so I'd say Converge for sure, but not for any, you know, any other reason than it's just what speaks to me, you know what I mean? But so those were the big ones for you, Botch.
Those were definitely two bands that reignited my love for hardcore, I would say. And also for crazy ass kind of hardcore, because nobody before, or not, let's put it that way. When I first listened to Converge and to Botch and some other bands like Coalesce and other also Hydrahead bands from the time, Corin, Union Suit, Vent, all that early kind of dissonant metalcore stuff. That was something that I had never heard before. And that was, to me, definitely game changer. Converge a lot. I'm still proud that I own a first press of Jane Doe. One of my most treasured things in my whole collection, I would say.
Yeah. Cool.
But I also have to say that one thing about Botch that I love is simply their bass player, Brian. I always tell my wife, if I were gay, that would be
That's
my target,
beard.
That guy. I think there is something very sexy about him playing the bass.
Oh, wow. Cool, cool.
Yeah. And it was interesting when I told him, he was like,
Oh, really? You told him that?
Yeah, of course. Awesome. I don't feel ashamed. You know, I'm coming from Cologne. We can proclaim our love for men, even though we ain't gay.
Yeah, over here. That's sweet.
Some like, I have one more music question, and then something that struck me when we were talking about the things that we talked about, like you also being a visual artist. First, the music question: Nazum versus Pick Destroyer.
I'm unfamiliar really with both of those bands. I've heard, people have told me to listen, and I have, but I'm not really familiar. Yeah. But yeah, that's all I can say. I think I had some friends who like produced a Pig Destroyer video a few years ago. So that's all I really know. There's like these dudes carrying a coffin down some stairs or something.
Should
some
be
of my
Pig
friends.
Destroyer. Yeah, I mean, like, it must be Pig Destroyer because Nazum is now inactive for
more than
a decade, which is, of course, because the guy died in the tsunami back in Southeast Asia.
All right. Were both of those Drum Machine bands?
No.
No, neither? Oh, okay.
I'm not sure about Nazum. I think they had a normal drummer. Mm. And Pete Destroyer, okay. I'm very sure they had. Last one. I wrote this down like 20 minutes ago, and 15 minutes ago I thought like, let's cut it. But nevertheless, as I'm a huge fan of comics, I have to ask. Marvel versus DC.
Oh, man. I guess I could care less is what I would say, unfortunately. I don't know anything about anything, you know? I'm trying to think if there's anything that I've liked that, I mean, I don't know. Something's just off-putting about superhero stuff for me. Mm-hmm. Venom seems cool. He's all like gross and slimy, so I think that's cool. My fiance is working on this game called Marvel Strike Force right now. Oh. I don't know if you're familiar with it. But there's some cool like Venom. I guess these characters like Silver Surfer and I don't know if I'm supposed to say anything. No, I think it's out. Some of these characters get like venomized, and so they're all like black slimy creatures, and that's exciting to me. Is like kind of when you cross pollinate things or anything that's like evil with teeth and stuff. So, but other than that, I'm not sure. What about you? Are you a Marvel or DC guy? I don't know the difference.
Marvel all the way. I'm even fortunate enough to teach a course every second year at my high school about Marvel.
Really? Oh wow, yeah. That's awesome. That's exciting. I mean, like, if you're into it. So is that kind of like Coca-Cola versus Pepsi? It's like Marvel and DC?
Yeah. Let's say when we compare Coca-Cola versus Pepsi in the 80s, yes. Because I think nowadays that is not a huge competition anymore, because Pepsi's numbers and appeal has gone down. But in the 80s, yes, I would agree with that. Although, you know, I always like to look at the cinematic point of it. And I hope that every normal person in this world agrees with me when I say, like, DC has the best singular superhero, aka Batman. And the Batman movies are awesome, especially the ones with Christian Bale. But when I look at the whole franchise, when I look at the DCEU cinematic stuff versus the Marvel cinematic stuff, even though the last few Marvel movies have been a little bit disappointing, I would still say that Marvel beats that competition from here to Siberia without an effort.
Okay. Marvel, where it's at. I'm trying to think if I've seen anything. I think I saw Fantastic Four when it came out like 20 years ago or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the only one.
Yeah, you have probably seen like one of the Spider-Man movies with Tobey Maguire or something like that.
Never have.
But I think that this Marvel thing, what I also always liked about Marvel is the way that there is an explanation for why these people have superpowers. In the 50s, most of the explanations were always like, okay, it has to do some kind with like nuclear radiation thing.
Yeah.
But it's not the way that, as with a lot of DC characters, they're either gods from the past or aliens fallen onto Earth. And, you know, that was never something that appealed to me. And for Marvel... there was always a kind of explanation.
So it's the origins of these guys that are kind of like is important to you.
Yeah, definitely.
Partially. Definitely. And among other things, I'm sure. Interesting.
Definitely. So if anybody wants to disagree with us on anything, the comments, or if you want to tell us which makeup and costume bands we forgot, please. We always love comments about that. If you generally like what we do here on the Veil of Sound, give us a subscription here on YouTube or follow us on our regular website, veilofsound.com. You can also visit us on Facebook and on Twitter. Maybe give us a like there or whatever you want to call it. You can also support us via Patreon. If you need any information for that, just hit us up. No problem. Then it's 20 minutes before kickoff. So, last question, the Niners or the Chiefs?
Going back, I don't care either which way, but I'm gonna say the Niners because my buddy Mike Manischewitz makes a bunch of cool music videos for Cancer Christ, Squid Pisser, my band The Manx. He does a billion things. He's amazing. One of my best friends. He's a Niners freak, and he always dresses up like Ronald McDonald, but with gold and red. So I'm gonna hope that the Niners win for his sake. But what about you? Did you say you're a Chiefs guy or?
I'm a Packers guy. So first of all, you know, I don't have any kind of cards in this one. But if I had to choose, I would choose the Niners because there are some people on this team that I think are like really, really cool. Plus, I would love the Cinderella story of Brock Purdy winning the first Super Bowl for the Niners in 30 years, I think, after Steve Young. The thing about Brock Purdy is he was the last selection in the NFL draft. What was it, 2 years ago? So, you know, from Mr. Irrelevant to Super Bowl champion.
Oh yeah.
That would be my kind of story.
Underdog stuff. I'm that's what I'm rooting for too.
No team which is in the Super Bowl is an underdog.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, just
at least for me. You know, they have beaten at least 16 other opponents out of a race, so.
Right. Yeah, you know, you're right. But you know, origins, you know, and to come all the way. So, yeah.
So, Thomas, thanks for all your time. Enjoy the rest of your day and talk to you soon, my friend. Bye-bye.
Of course, dude. Thank you so much. This was awesome. Appreciate you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.